This is The Book Show. We welcome two writers this evening whose latest books use hotels as a setting to explore belonging, love and identity. Rick Moody, author of The Ice Storm and Garden State, joins us from a New York studio. Rick, in Hotels of North America, we're introduced to Reginald E. Morse, and apart from the introduction and the afterword, the story is entirely narrated through online hotel reviews written by Reg, who writes for a site called RateYourLodging.com. So why does Reg stay in so many hotels, and why does he share so much of his personal life with readers of these posts?
Well, he stays in hotels because he's sort of a guy who fell out of the economy during the Great Recession and who has had trouble working his way back in. And he kind of tumbles into this hotel reviewing thing almost by accident, and it sort of ornaments his already grim lifestyle in a way. So he writes the hotel reviews partly because he's already staying in the hotels. And I think that he, to answer your second question, that he reveals so much because it's in the nature of the online post that one is longing for human contact of a kind. So the longer he writes, the further he goes in revealing himself.
Joanna Walsh also joins us here in studio. And Joanna, your long essay, Hotel, is part of the Object Lesson series, which is about the hidden lives of ordinary things, published by The Atlantic and Bloomsbury. Before I ask you a question, could you maybe just read a section from it for us?
There was a time in my life when I lived in hotels. Around this time, the time I did not spend in hotels was time I did not live. During this other time, I haunted a marriage I was soon to leave. There's no place like home, and as home seemed hardly to qualify as a place anymore, I began to look for something elsewhere. I got myself a job as a hotel reviewer for a startup website. There was lots of reviewing to be done. I reviewed grand hotels and boutique hotels, budget hotels and expensive hotels, city hotels mostly, and country hotels occasionally. In each hotel, I stayed one night, two, three at most. If I planned carefully, I could live in hotels for weeks at a time without taking a break. What did I look for in hotels? A home away from home? Perhaps.
And it was Joanna Walsh reading there from Hotel. Like Reg in Rick Moody's novel, Joanna, you were a hotel reviewer. So what brought you to that job and did you expect to like it?
I can hardly remember really why I decided to do this. I think it was something I realised only retrospectively, which was a desire to be elsewhere than I was at the time. It was when a lot of websites were expanding and coming into being in the late 2000s, and then I was able to do these quite strange things. It was a gap in which I could insert myself somehow into this luxury market, which, you know, I don't know that it's even possible anymore. I experienced a lot of places I might not have done otherwise.
Rick, throughout the reviews, we get a sense of Reg's failing life and enterprise. He's a bit of a shambles, really. But this is drip-fed throughout the series of reviews. So does being on the road allow Reg to assess himself in a way that he couldn't do at home? And is it sort of less distracting to be in a neutral space like a hotel?
Well, it reminds me of that great Joycean formulation in Portrait of the Artist, silence, exile, and cunning. So Reg is in exile from family a little bit and from the rigors of a daily job and so on. And I think that that exile allows him reflective capabilities that he might not otherwise have. So yes, being on the road is the route into the investigation of self.
Would you maybe read one of Reg's blog posts for us?
I would love to. This bit is about the Plaza Hotel, though, as is often the case, he doesn't really talk about the hotel that much. The Plaza Hotel, 768 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, December 27th, 1970 through January 2, 1971. The proprietors of this web publishing venture, where I have now been posting for several months, have expressed a preference that I refrain from libeling existing establishments and indicated that if my remarks cannot be confined to the merits of the particular hotel in question, they will have to ask me if I would consider posting elsewhere. But I know that you, the audience, are enjoying these essays on the nomadic compulsion. Am I willing to play ball? Am I a utility infielder, a multi-purpose kind of guy, willing to tell you about one of the first hotels I remember staying in as a child, if that constitutes a respite from the truth as I practice it here? I am willing to tell you such things.
And that was Rick Moody there reading from Hotels of North America. Rick, it's debatable whether writing these posts makes Reg's life better, but does being on the road make his life any better?
I don't think being on the road makes his life better at all. I would argue that writing is the only route out that Reginald Morse has. And this is the case for many writers. Maybe Joanna would even agree that the actual writing about the hotel expresses something in a way it expresses self. And so I think for Reg, even though his economic prospects are grim, the language and the excess of his language is a way for him to speak of himself. And that constitutes a kind of therapy.
I like the way that Reg manages to get round the rubric of these websites and goes from using the conventional language of hotel reviews to talking about very personal things. And certainly, I think I'd rather talk about this person in hotel who's a version of me as a narrator rather than saying I think. But the narrator in hotel doesn't write things which reveal anything in her hotel reviews. I think they're all done completely to rubrics, certainly mine were. But she does find out that hotels are places where writing takes place of various kind, postcards, diaries, and that the writing is some kind of activity that is to do with being in a hotel. It's a kind of escape, just as hotels are a kind of escape.
Joanna, you intercut your essays on hotels with self-examination of a number of stories, and one that you focus on particularly is Freud and his patient Dora. So who was Dora, and why did you feel that her story was relevant to include in a book on hotels?
Well, Dora was a teenage girl. She was Freud's first case that he wrote down, and I thought that was very important because I'm interested in Freud as a storyteller, really, because he's the most marvellous storyteller, because he had the intention to put down the facts in a very straight way. But inevitably he doesn't. He includes his own opinions, including his opinions about Dora and why she remains a mystery, because she decided to terminate treatment with him. And so in some ways she remains a story that's endlessly open and that can be endlessly speculated on. And Freud turns himself into a character, and he turns real people into characters. He gives them different names, but the only person he doesn't rename is himself. So he's in some ways it's a kind of parallel for what I'm doing in Hotel, that he is talking about himself and talking about life, real issues. But also I was interested that a lot of Freud's clients stayed in hotels. They were rich. They tended to spend a lot of time thinking about their health, and there was certainly an idea in the 19th century, in the early 20th century, just as there is today, I think, that hotels are somewhere that you can go to be cured, you can go to rest, you can go to revive yourself. You go there to treat yourself, and the hotels are now seen as a treat, but perhaps in that kind of double-edged word, they're both a treat in terms of being something that you should enjoy, but they're also a treat in that you are treating yourself for some kind of condition when you're there.
There's also a sense, and maybe you think this, Rick, that hotels are a luxury, they are a privilege, they're for people who have means, and there's a whole economic argument about hotels, I think, as well.
You know, I would take issue with that to some extent, because one thing that happened, you know, in the United States after the Great Recession was that there was a real housing crisis, and as a result of that, a lot of people moved into sort of the lowest rung of hotels in North America, and you would often see people who were living there for months at a time. When I was writing the book, my wife, who's a photographer, was on the road for many months, and I stayed with her quite a bit, and we frequently would see hotels where that was the home address for certain Americans of the most economically challenged variety. So the idea that hotels in general are a luxury to me is sort of a beautiful, fragile myth when compared to the reality that now this is a place for people who have nowhere else to go, which is the fact.
Joanna, you say as well that staying in a hotel is a symptom, and neither Hotels of America nor your book seems to say much that's positive about hotels.
So I actually like hotels.
Do you like hotels? What about you, Rick? How do you feel about them?
I'm a homebody. I'd rather stay at home, really. Yeah. So even the really great hotels. I mean, this is my argument. We'll see what Joanna says. But my argument is that there's more chance for the really great hotels to do badly than for the really bad hotels to do badly, because all the great hotels have to do is fail at customer service to be really horrible. Whereas the really bad hotels, if you just get one sympathetic look from the reception person, you know, you feel like you can go on for another 12 hours. But by and large, the tendency in hotels is to reinforce the idea that we're away from home and we're away from what we care about. And for me, there's no bathrobe in existence, no matter how great, that's going to cover over that longing for home.
There's a sense when you enter a hotel as well that it's been, you know, it's been cleansed every time somebody leaves. Mm-hmm. So it's remade every time someone new goes in there. And yet there's parts in Hotels of America, Rick, where you talk about the grime and the things that are sort of ground into the carpet. So I'm wondering, at one point, Reg says that should we not be trying to create a national conversation on the subject of cleaning the unlaundered bedspreads of the world? So should Reg start an online petition to get some answers to this, maybe?
Most definitely. I mean, it's a real issue. Perhaps it's better in Europe, but in North America, there are great, you know, they don't do anything with those bedspreads, which is, it's appalling.
Joanna, you're here in Dublin for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. So what's your hotel like? And can you stop thinking critically about places you go to stay anymore? Can you stop yourself making observations?
Well, I'm staying in an Airbnb. And actually, I'd just been reading Rick's book, and I did think about the bedspread. But luckily, it doesn't have one. It just has a duvet cover, so I assume that's been well laundered. It's interesting, you know. To be honest, when I'm traveling myself, I often stay in somewhere like Airbnb because I like the ability to come and go. But also, you know, I can't afford most hotels apart from maybe those very low down ones in the States that Rick was talking about. Certainly not the kind that I've stayed in. But I was very excited to go to Mexico with the British Council on a literary exchange, and I did get to stay in a swanky hotel again in Mexico City, and that was very exciting for me. I realised how much I'd missed the kind of strange. Not entirely beautiful, because there's always something rather odd about hotel design, especially when you find that it has the same lobby paintings on every single floor and you can't tell which floor you've got out at. But the kind of luxury, the anonymous luxury, which also kind of repels you because nothing is where you think it is, and you're very likely to switch something on in an incorrect way, or knock over something in the room, or switch the air conditioning wrong. You know, there's that kind of whole uncomfortable grappling, which is also quite interesting.
Well, I'm never going to think about hotel bedspreads in the same way again, so let's put them out of our mind. And my thanks to Rick and Joanna. Hotel by Joanna Walsh is published by Bloomsbury, and Hotels of North America is published by Serpent's Tail. Now, on Thursday, May 19th in Dublin, Joanne Harris, author of the best-selling novel Chocolat, will be giving a keynote speech at Words Ireland's first national literature conference, WordCon. Harris made headlines earlier this year when she pulled out of a UK writers festival and sparked an international debate about terms and conditions for writers attending the very many literary festivals around the world. Michael McLaughlin is the chair of Words Ireland, and he's with me now. Also joining us is Bert Wright, who runs many literary events, such as the Mountains to See DLR Book Festival and the Bram Stoker Festival. And from our Athlone studio, we're joined by writer Nuala O'Connor. So, Michael, tell me, what is Words Ireland and what does it do? Why does it need to exist?
Well, Words Ireland is a collaboration of seven literature organisations which came together a couple of years ago, to form a collective resource and a clear voice for the literature sector in Ireland. The seven organisations are the Irish Literature Exchange, which has just changed its name to Literature Ireland, Children's Books Ireland, the Irish Writers' Centre, Stinging Fly, Poetry Ireland, Munster Literature Centre and Publishing Ireland. And why is it required? Well, I suppose we didn't really know ourselves whether there was a requirement for an organisation like Words Ireland when we started off. It was just about meeting and discussing mutual things that we think could be of benefit to the sector and to writers. And I suppose the first thing that came to us was that, yes, there is a need for the sector to speak at one voice on certain matters. And one of the tangible outcomes of that is our first WordCon, which we are running on the 19th of May in the National Library in Dublin. And I suppose that's about bringing festivals and organisations which put on events for writers together to discuss whether things could be improved, could be better, or how do we do things that are going to be of benefit more to the writers and to the public when it comes to literature events.
Bert, we're going to talk about this issue very, very broadly. I do think it's a really important one, but you run the Mountains to Sea Festival and various events in the Pavilion Theatre in Dunleary. What do you think, and leave off your PR hat for a moment, what do you think are the elements of a successful kind of literary arts festival?
The elements of a successful literary arts festival? Well, obviously you need to have a bill that features a number of headline names. You need to make sure that local authors and new writers are included also. So you've got a broad spectrum. But I mean, you're administering a budget, so you have to be answerable to your sponsors, so there is no point in having, you know, empty theatres and small spaces. So you have to gratify all these people, superstars, mid-list writers, new writers. All of these people have got to be looked after. You have to look after your audience. You have to make sure that there are competent, eloquent moderators at all of the events, that it's properly run. Writers respond to festivals in proportion to the quality of the treatment they get there and the size of the audiences. If two men and dogs show up, nobody feels good about it. We've all been there. But I think one of the key things is that the rate of growth in festivals and events in Ireland has grown so fast and so exponentially. We haven't really caught up with the organisation. So I think this conference, where I'm going to be speaking myself on a panel, is a great idea. It's long overdue. The Society of Authors in the UK, for instance, have been on this case for a while. But it's well overdue, and I think it should be fruitful.
Well, Nuala O'Connor, who joins us from our Athlone studio, you're a writer and you attend a lot of festivals. And without sort of naming and shaming specific festivals or issues, what are the problems that face writers when it comes to going to festivals? Is it logistics? Is it money? Is it selling books?
I think in the first instance, the approach is often made to you as a writer without specifics being ironed out. So sometimes even fee is not mentioned in the first approach. And I often get a bit giddy and agree to do something without knowing what the terms are. So I think if festivals and libraries and anybody else who invites writers to speak could provide a contract in the first instance, outlining fee and timings and venue, that would be really helpful.
Do you feel as well that, I mean, there's a lot of writers out there who would love to do festivals, maybe don't get asked to speak or read at them. Is a festival oversold as an opportunity for a writer in terms of it being worth your time, worth the travelling, you know, working, taking the time away from the desk?
I don't know about oversold. I mean, it's an incredible opportunity to meet your fellow writers, also to hear people from abroad, maybe, that you wouldn't always have a chance to hear. It can be a mind-expanding experience. I was at the Corch Festival last week and heard so many great writers and have been so full of thoughts and, reading lots of new books since then. So it's very useful in so many ways. I put out a call on my Facebook in the last few days asking people about their poor experiences, because we all know what the good experiences entail. But just to see what kind of challenges and issues were coming up for writers. And interestingly, people only posted the good stuff on my public page, and then they private messaged me about their bad experiences, because writers don't want to be seen to be complaining either. But a lot of the stuff that came up was around payment issues. People were you know, one woman was waiting 11 months to be paid. She's still waiting, for example, by a festival. So things about being paid timely, being paid the amount agreed, often the what you agree and what you get is not the same thing. And then another thing that came up over and over was a lot of times writers weren't made to feel welcome, particularly if they were new writers. And they felt there was a disparity between how established writers and newer writers were treated. Now, obviously, this is not all festivals, but these are specific instances that were mentioned to me.
I always remember Jeff Dyer talking about going to the Hay Festival. I think he said he was paid in 12 bottles of wine when he would have preferred the petrol money for his car. And again, he also pointed out, you know, the people who put up the marquees and the lighting and the food and all, those people are paid, so why not the people who are actually the draw? It's great to be asked to a festival, and you are a lot, Nuala, but what do you think are the ideal conditions, reasonable conditions for a writer at a festival?
I think that you are met and welcomed, that they take into consideration that you have travelled a distance and so that they pay your a travel allowance, that you are accommodated where that's necessary, where it would be difficult to get home, particularly if the reading is late at night, that they take into account the fact that you have to eat at some point during the day, you know, not necessarily to pay for your meal, but to point you in the right direction. And basically that they make you feel like that you're a good and relevant part of their festival. You were worth inviting, and so they should treat you in that way.
Michael, you're a publisher with Penguin Ireland, and obviously you're dealing with a lot of writers head on. What do you think are the issues facing writers at the moment? And I particularly mean people who are sort of, you know, mid-career, they're not the bright young things. Where are they at?
I think mid-career writers is really one of the key areas that Words Ireland is looking at. And it's because going to a festival, for instance, is really important to any writer, but particularly for mid-career writers who maybe are writing that difficult third or fourth book. They may not have an advance in place for that book or a contract. And, you know, going to a festival, which we will hopefully pay them a few hundred euro, is really important. And it's also difficult for writers in that position. They're vulnerable. And, you know, Anne Enright, we talked to her about this issue, and she gave us a fantastic quote about how, as she says, that many writers, believe it or not, are too shy to ask about fees sometimes. And, you know, Irish festivals are run by dedicated people with limited budgets, but they do have a budget and they do charge at the door for the most part. And as she says, it's not just dispiriting to find you're the only professional in the room who has not been paid. It is also oddly humiliating. And I think it is difficult. And what we're trying to do in Words Ireland is bring the festivals and event organisations along on a journey, hold their hand and explain that, yes, if you're bringing the lighting designer or the plumber out to do something, you do not expect them to come and do something for nothing. It's exactly the same with a writer. And it's not just the event, which might last 45 minutes or an hour and a half. It's about the getting there, possibly staying overnight, the eating, as Nuala said, and the getting back again. And that all adds up. And, you know, for a writer who doesn't maybe have a contract for that third or fourth book, well, then it's really important that they do get paid. You know, it's just not a simple matter of saying, well, you know, we've got a small budget, so we don't have much money, and
you'll
we
get
can't
exposure.
Afford. Well, yeah, and exposure. And some people also say, well, you'll sell some books, but you know, that book might have been published a number of years before.
Sure.
The advance might not have earned out, and you might not get any extra money because of that. So it's critically important that organisers of events realise that, you know, the star of the show, which is the writer, whether they're a mid-career writer or a well-known writer, as Bert says, or somebody starting out, but it is really important that they do get remunerated for their attendance.
Bert, this conversation sort of started with Joanne Harris back in February talking about not being paid and various people pulling out of festivals. They're very tricky things to organise. There's an awful lot of plates to spin when you're putting a festival together. And it's not unreasonable to think that a more successful writer would be paid more than an emerging one, even if that seems unfair.
Yeah, I think Joanne Harris hit the nail on the head when she said that writing is a vocation, but it's also a profession. And that's what a lot of people who are running events forget. To me, everything starts from the premise that writers should be remunerated in the same way as any other service provider. You know, we've heard a bit about the sound guy gets paid, everybody else gets paid, but they expect the writer to do something for nothing. And especially that point that Anne made about writers are embarrassed, and the point that Nuala made about lack of clarity, you know, nobody mentions a fee at the beginning. I think these are two really important things.
Fairness to Bert, to you, Bert, I think it is very difficult for writers to speak up. You know, I think festivals take a divide and conquer attitude, either knowingly or unknowingly, and I think it's up to organisations like ours to, you know, to speak on behalf of writers. And you know, there are well-known festivals in this country which discriminate and pay, you know, some writers quite substantial amounts, but then pay other writers nothing at all. And I think there will come a time, hopefully in the next year or so, when those festivals will be called out, and and hopefully writers will be able to stand up and say, sorry, I'm not going to attend unless everybody is getting something. And that's really important.
Well, there's lots more to be said on this conversation. And I think if people wanted to talk about this and hear discussions about this, they can go along to WordCon, which takes place at the National Library on May 19th. And all information can be found on wordsireland.ie. That's all we've time for this evening. The show is produced by Regan Hutchins, and the series producer is Zoe Cummins.